There we go. Yes, the wonderful Scott C is going to speak for us today. And take it away, Scott. Thank you ever so much, and everyone, welcome.
Thanks, Mark. I'm really glad I got kicked out too, so I got this opportunity. I'm a sex addict. My story started a really long time ago. I came into the 12-step program in 1986 in Los Angeles. One of the points, and I'll try to come back to this more than once, because the thing that I learned over the last 30 some odd years is to keep coming back. I also, I've been in meetings where they talk about having so many, and they actually know how many slips they have under their belt, and kudos to that, because I don't know how many. I just kept coming back, whether I slipped or not, whether my disease progressed or not. And I learned a lot of things. I had a lot to learn. I had a lot to learn about how to live. I was raised Mormon, raised Mormon, and I was gay. Needless to say, that intertwines with my sex addiction, and it impacts my experience of the 12 steps as well. There was just so many things I didn't know how to do, and so much judgment. I was just because I grew up in an alcoholic home. I had I was the oldest, six of us, and I was the golden child. But, you know, I had a few things to overcome because I was dyslexic. So it took a lot of work, but, you know, I was able to graduate with high honors, do all that, you know, show the way. And, I didn't smoke or drink or do drugs or anything. I did sex. I did a lot of sex. That's not true. I need to back up. Because there was an abuse situation where I was, there was more than one. Because conservative religions or fucked up religions or religions where they're trying to control your sex, there's a lot of people who like to use helping you get over your homosexuality as a end to sexually abusing you. And I certainly had my share of those people. And it affected my addiction. The last great show on that scenario was very damaging emotionally and spiritually and everything. And this person came into my life with a written revelation from God to come telling me he had been sent into my life to heal me. This is what I'd been praying for, you know, 12 years. And then he proceeded to just twist me around around that bullshit and use almost every possible part of my religion to reinforce that. The reason I mention that is because it's very obvious from the behavior. Prior to his interference in my life, I had had sex with maybe 12 separate people. And I knew all their names. I knew them. And after his interference in my life, I was able to have, I don't know, able to have, I had sex with 10,000 people. And I very seldom knew their names. I didn't want to know their names. What I wanted was to be numb. That was the point. And, you know, and I'll guarantee you this one thing. You don't want to have, if you don't want to have feelings and you're not willing to drink to get rid of them, have sex with 5 people in a day. You'll be numb. I was. It was, and that was the point. I didn't want to feel. I didn't want to be, I didn't want to feel. Because in a lot of ways, you know, coming out and entering the world, I lost everything that I valued. Everything. My dreams, my hopes, my aspirations, everything. It was all gone. And all I was left with was sex and a good job. And that wasn't enough. Like I said, I graduated with honors and I had dyslexia. And that was an accomplishment. And I went on to get, you know, a job with a big 8 accounting firm. At the time, there were 8. One of the things I couldn't do was stay at work. I would go have sex. And I eventually had to, I eventually moved to avoid getting fired. There were so many things that sex interfered with. It was just, like I said, I couldn't stay at work. I couldn't really do much of anything without having that in the background. In sex addiction or in recovery, there, you define your own recovery plan. And after 2 or 3 years, my sponsor finally said, here, let's just do this. Let's set the boundaries. So you have to know their name. You have to have sex someplace where you can't be arrested. You have to have safe sex. I think that's about it. You know, everything else, he even convinced me, which wasn't hard because I had been arrested a couple times, and to go home. If I was going to have sex with somebody at work, to invite them home, to meet them there, to do that, to leave work and to come back. And so I did that. And there was one time in the great process of recovering where I was, I came home from a weekend night, a Saturday night, and I had had sex with 5 people. That didn't actually make me feel good, but, and I was doing the, you know, slip mentality beat up, and but I sat down and I could tell you their names. I could tell you something about them. I could, we hadn't done anything where we could have been arrested, and we had had safe sex. And that was a win. That was a win at that time. And, you know, and I don't, you know, and I kept coming back, you know, even when it didn't seem well. Shortly after that, the sponsor who had helped me on so many levels, he, within a probably about a year of that time, died from HIV. That really threw a crimp in my program, so to speak. This sponsor, I've shared about him in other meetings, and I'll share more about him. He's the man who basically, one of the men, I guess, there's not many, but he's one who saved my life. He's the first person that was ever unconditionally loving to me. I told the story about, the coming home from, or not coming home, but calling him after I'd been doing crystal all night, and I had to get ready for work on Monday if I was good or calling sick. And I called him instead. And we were way past the point where you do that. You should have called in the beginning. You should have called before you done it. We weren't there. His question was, do you want to keep going? And I said, I don't know. That was the honest answer. I don't know. I don't. He said, well, are you tired now? And I said, yes, I'm exhausted. I've been up for 24 hours. So he said, come over here, lay on my couch, and we'll talk about it when you're ready to decide. And there was no judgment, and there was no rejection, and there was no, if you come over, you have to do this. And there was always something like that in my religion. If we're gonna love you, support you, do anything, you have to play our game. So I did go over. And after a couple hours, I was willing to stop for the day. And that happened more than once. recovery was a really long process. I worked the steps. My sponsors, because I had more than one, I had mentors in the program, were kind of mystified because I was doing what they said, and I still wasn't stopping. Just as a caveat on that, they didn't address the abuse. There was no way to do it. They didn't understand it. I didn't really talk about it. I hadn't really shared all the particulars of that with anyone. The first time I talked about it was in inpatient treatment in Golden Valley. I took 2 days to share all of it. And the counselor's response was, you're never going to be, you're never going to be able to have a relationship until you stop talking about this relationship as if it were love. And that was the start of unraveling several things. Fast forward back to LA and my sponsor. You gave me so many good pieces of information. One of the things was to join the West Hollywood swim team so I could connect with my my new community in a way that was non-sexual. And he was absolutely right on. And it was really interesting to get that experience and to have it. And then the other thing that happened, and this is, I was Big Eight accounting, blah, blah, blah. I went to a training seminar, which is what they do every, you have a week away and go to whatever. They go through this training stuff and help you progress and spend a lot of money and make a write-off. I don't know. Anyway, so I went to it. It was a business meeting. One of the team building experiences at the facility we were at was to pour a bunch of goldfish into a chlorinated pool, and then to have everybody get in and catch them, and as teams, we divided into teams and throw them in the bucket and blah 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 blah. And I played along. I went in. I participated. There were a group of people around the side just looking at us like we were insane, and it was disgusting. And you heard the sighs and the judgments and all of that. And just so you know, this was back in the late 80s. There wasn't the same level of, oh, it's hurting something. Oh, you're killing something. Nope. It was good, clean fun. And so I participated and I got out and of the pool. I looked around and saw, you know, the massacre of goldfish. And I just went, wow, this is really not cool. And, you know, by this point, I've been a part of it. And I looked around and I said, well, you know, I looked down, there was one goldfish down in the pool. And I said, I can't save them all. I can save this one. So I went and grabbed it. And then I went looking for a cup of water. And I found one and I put the goldfish in that. And the little things that happen, you know, I took the cup of water to my room. And then I came back out to the pool where, you know, they were still cleaning up the mess. And somebody was looking for their cup that had their one of their contacts in it. And they were like, this cup was over here. I was like, oh. So I went back to my hotel room and looked in the cup that the goldfish was in. And sure enough, the contact was in it. And so I got another cup and took it out to the guy, told him he needed to clean this. And then when we left, I put the goldfish in a plastic bag from the hotel room. And and put it in my briefcase and took it home on the plane. And then got back to my sponsor. And I got back home and I told my sponsor I had a goldfish. And I said, I didn't know what to do with it. Do I throw it down the toilet? What do I do? He's like, well, honey, you know, you're not very, why don't you get a bowl and keep it? Because you don't focus on anything but yourself. So why don't you start with this? I'm like, I can't take care of a goldfish. He said, yeah, that's why we're starting small. Keep it. And so I did. And that's where I start. That's where I was at. He was right. He summed it up. I couldn't have taken care of more than a goldfish. I really couldn't have. There wasn't room in my life for anything else. I was just tore up from the floor up and trying to mask it all. Anyway, so part of the reason I share that story is that's where I was about 30 years ago. Today, I have a husband of 23 years. I have three children that we've adopted as teenagers out of the foster care system. I have had upwards of 100 pigeons. I don't anymore. And I have I now have 4 bearded dragons, and you know, we're going fine. So I seem to be able to take care of a little more than a goldfish now. And I have time to do some sewing up for myself and my family. I'm working on meditation. I really appreciate the available guided meditations on YouTube and other places where I can find it, because I can't just sit there and meditate. But I can do the guided stuff. I particularly like that they're not too, oh, it has to be this way. But like I said, I shared the story to show what coming back over the last 30 years has done. And I don't have, you know, you hear these people, oh, I've never slipped again, oh, it's never happened, da, da, da. And I know I haven't talked about the alcohol, but it's really just in the background there. And I had to give that up. And I had to get sober on alcohol and drugs to make some progress. I think it allows me to have clarity of mind and to learn the things, to look at the, to be able to have my sponsor say, yeah, baby, all you can take care of is a goldfish. So, you know, let's just start small and do that. And and that's, yeah, I don't know what to say. That's where I'm going to stop, because we've gotten to today, and today is pretty amazing for me in my life. I got all kinds of stories, but, you know, like I said, my point is keep coming back no matter what. And that's what I did, and my life changed. Oh, here's another thing. Because if you think your life is going to get better, I was told early on that that's not what the program promised. It said your life will get different. That's what I was told by my sponsors. And that's what happened for me. My life got really different, because there was another person in program. I guess I'm not going to end. Another person in program and she and I used to have debates about what was the worst thing that could happen. And that was either having a child or getting HIV. And we weren't sure, because both of them were not really appealing ideas. So to come to the place where I would consider adopting a teenager, that's a hell of a ride. Oh, yeah, God, I guess I'm not done. Something else to point out, the other thing about hitting bottoms and losing everything, because I have to tell you, that when I got excommunicated, when I left my wife, when I left the Mormon church, when I went through all of that, like I said, it was everything. You know, I didn't have anything left. I had no more goals, no more direction, no more anything. And that is an amazing place to be, to lose all of it. I lost my family too, my biological family. I don't know how much there was to keep there, but yeah, they didn't make the transition. When you've done, when you get to the place where you've done the things that you were never wanted to do, I never wanted to cheat on my wife. I never wanted to, primarily because I never wanted to be my dad. And when you've done enough that you're like, oh, you lost this one too, kid. Sorry. And there's just nowhere. I don't know. If you haven't been there, you don't know what it's like. But because of, you find out there's always something else you could lose. There's always one more thing that can fall away. No matter what you think you've lost, there's always more. And but what I found at the end of that experience was when you don't have anything else, you found, what I found was myself. And that was kind of amazing. You know, for me particularly, because this is something I'm dealing with right now, with the final death of religion for me, is a, it talked about, one of the things I was told is it's my body, it's my soul, and it's my mind. And that is not what I was taught in religion, or I'm sorry, standard 12 steps. You know, it's always God going to help you in your mind. And whatever, it's not my journey. My journey has been to find that I, you know, it is my body, it is my mind, and it is my soul. And the things I've gotten to experience, it's a paradox. I don't know how to explain it. Because I know the cost of self-will. I do. I know the cost of, you know, it's going to be this way. I'm going to make it happen. I know. And I know the strength of letting go. And stopping to think that, letting go and not thinking I have the answer. And being open to learn something new. And I'm grateful for the things I've learned, because I would, but I, you know, I've always learned them from, well, I don't want to say that. Some of the greatest things that I've learned have been from my sponsors, from the input, and from listening in the program, and all kinds of things. So before I do it again, thank you for letting me share. Thank you for letting me be here, and keep coming back. It works if you work it. It does if you don't. It just doesn't work for you.